This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
And this week we're on episode 43.
And we are discussing Bison Daley.
Yeah, we're coming at you with another sports disappearance?
Yeah.
Question mark?
That's,
yeah.
Yeah, unsolved disappearance?
Yeah.
Who knows?
It's mostly just unsolved on a technicality.
Yeah.
But this one's really interesting. So just because you heard sports, don't turn it off.
And I had never heard of it before.
Me either. I feel like I should have heard about it, but I didn't.
Yeah.
But we were also real young when it happened. So that's probably why.
Very true.
But what are you binging this week, my friend?
So this week, I'm going to go with binging White Claw.
Okay.
Which we all know, girl loves a White Claw.
Yeah, it should be a sponsor at this point.
Yes. And, but they came out with the new variety pack with new flavors.
Yes.
And I got it, and it has the mango, which I had had before, but it has lemon, tangerine, and watermelon.
Yeah.
Lemon and tangerine, great. And I might be hated for this.
Yeah.
But the watermelon one fucking sucks.
That's sad. I haven't tried them yet. So.
And like, I love watermelon flavored things.
Yeah.
And it just tasted like the rind of a watermelon.
Ew.
And I was so disappointed.
The worst part of a watermelon.
Exactly. I wanted it to be like a little sweeter.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It sucked though. And I was disappointed.
That's unfortunate.
I did drink them all.
Yeah. But you liked the other flavors.
Yes. Okay. Because I'm not going to waste a White Claw.
Yeah, exactly. Why would you do that?
But what is your binge?
My binge is really dumb this week.
Okay.
So, I can't believe I'm saying this. This is so dumb. My binge is the Google Chrome extension Tabby Cats.
Yes! Oh my God. Okay, she showed this to me and I love it.
Yeah. So, if you don't know what Tabby Cats is, it is a Google Chrome extension that every time you open a new tab, a new little cartoon cat shows up. And they have really dumb names like Splendiferous Rainbow, and they're very cute. But the more tabs you keep opening, the more stuff you get. So, like right now, my guy has a little witch's hat, a little piece of cake, and it even has like a little rocket sometimes. And it's just so fucking cute. And every time you open a tab, which I open like 1,000 at work every day, I'm just like, look at that little cat.
I know. It makes you, because I had it for like a week before we moved. But it makes you so happy every
it's
time
just
you
so
open
cute.
A tab.
Yeah. And sometimes if one of us at work, because pretty much everyone on my team has this extension now, there's a couple of holdouts, but we'll get them.
I've seen like walking by your area where I'm like, ha, look
they
at
all
cat.
Have tabby cats. But if we find one that's especially cute, we'll like screenshot it and send it to our group chat at work. And it's just, it brings joy, lights amount of joy throughout a dark, dark day.
Right? That's a good ass binge. It's not dumb at all. I love that.
I like have been doing it for a while now and it's just so fucking cute. I want everyone to share the happiness. And if you pay like 99 cents or something, you can get different animals if you want to. Like they have
what?
Dogs, they have bunnies. Yeah. Yeah.
You
someone on my team
blew my mind.
Did the dog one.
Oh.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. 99 cents.
I'm speechless.
I like how there are like extensions where every time you open a tab, it's like that goes towards planting a tree. And I'm like, fucking cats. Yes.
I didn't know that was a thing either. So.
I think it's like every 10 tabs you open, it'll like help donate to plant a tree or something. I do not remember what it's called, though, because I'm a trash person.
You just control T all day.
Yeah, buddy. Wow, I just learned something new. You open a new tab by control T.
You
listen.
Work on a computer.
I know.
50 hours a week.
I like learned maybe 2 years ago that reopening a closed tab was something you could do. I thought every time I accidentally exited out of a tab that I was forever gone from that.
I didn't know that, but I would just used to do control H and open up the history and then just press
there
the
you
last
go.
One.
Yeah, if you just right click on opening a new tab, it'll say reopen closed tab and then
Oh, excuse me.
Everyone who's listening is like, yeah, no, we all know this. You're fucking dumb.
I'm so bad at technology.
Me too. And we work on computers all day. But do you want to get into our story?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do this thing.
So just a little synopsis.
Yes.
Bison Dele was a former NBA star. So we're going basketball this time.
Yeah.
Who went missing off of his boat in 2002. His disappearance remains unsolved, but likely at the hands of his brother, who then committed suicide and took all of his secrets to the grave.
And guess what? This one's got twists and turns.
Exactly. And you kind of fall in love with Bison.
Yeah, he's a really cool guy, I think.
He's my favorite.
He's just very down to earth.
Yes.
And definitely didn't seem like he cared at all that he was a basketball player.
Nope.
Yeah. So, let's just get right into it. We're going to give you a little background on him, like we always do. So, Bison Dele was actually born Brian Carson Williams on April 6, 1969 in Fresno, California. He was the second son to Patricia Phillips and Eugene, otherwise known as Gino, Williams Jr. His father, Gino?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. His father, Gino, was a singer in the musical group The Platters, which is a fun name.
Yeah, I, like, got to listen to a little bit on other, like, shows and podcasts I was watching for this, and I was like, it's like that cute little, like, jazz kind of quartet.
Yeah, like upbeat.
Yeah,
it fun.
Was, it was good. Nice. I liked it.
I didn't think to actually listen to their music, but I should give it a shot.
Hell yeah.
So, Brian was also of African American and Native American, specifically Cherokee descent. His mom was Native American and his dad was African. And he also had an older brother by 2 years named Kevin. So, the couple got divorced in 1970. And Patricia Phillips raised her sons without a father figure until she remarried. Patricia's second marriage ended when Brian was in the seventh grade, and it is said that the second man she married, she actually really regrets and doesn't like talking about it, so something was going on there. It's said that her husband was emotionally and physically abusive to Brian and Kevin. When he was a senior in high school, he attended the Bishop Gorman High School in Las Vegas. And after that, he did this when he moved there with his brother to live with their dad. Before transferring to this school, he attended St. Monica Catholic High School in Santa Monica, California. And his jersey has actually been retired at this school to this day. He was named McDonald's All-American player while playing basketball at this school. And he actually used to be very into, like, being a track and field runner while he was at St. Monica. I can't talk. I don't know what's wrong.
You're just wanting to say Santa Monica.
I am wanting to say Santa Monica, and I'm afraid that I said Santa Monica earlier.
Nope.
I didn't?
You're good.
Okay, cool. When he was in the 10th grade, he hit a growth spurt in high school and tried his hand at playing basketball for the first time. And at his full height, he was 6'10", and I read that and my jaw literally dropped. Like, I know basketball players are tall, but that's absurd.
Yeah, and I heard some accounts that he was 6'10", and some that he was 6'11". So, yeah. Like, but
he was a big dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he also weighed 260 pounds. He didn't have a ton of passion for basketball, but he was great at it naturally, so he stuck with it. And he played as a left-hand forward. And then did he start playing as a center when he did? No?
Nope.
I read that somewhere.
He was always a forward.
Okay. The other thing about this story is there's literally so much different information online about it. It's because I read on like a Time magazine article that he was a center. Dumb.
Because I read that he played with like Shaquille O'Neal, who was a center.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And
yeah.
He was like supposed to be the power forward to the center.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Sports.
Sports. Yay. We don't know about them.
Mm-mm.
So it turns out that he was pretty freaking good at basketball.
Yeah.
And he began playing at the collegiate level. In his first year, he began playing at the University of Maryland. During his time at the University of Maryland, he earned the Rookie of the Year honors for the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Nice.
So, like, he's doing really well.
Yeah.
But he did have some differences with his coach, Bob Wade, and decided to no longer play for the University of Maryland. Then, in the next year, which was 1998, he transferred to the University of Arizona to play basketball there, where he got along with all of the players on his team. He wasn't really like him, like all the other ones.
Yeah.
Where his teammates would be out partying all the time, he would be hosting a black tie dinner party in his room or visiting an art gallery.
Yeah, he was really like...
He's very cultured.
Yeah.
So he did also enjoy playing other sports during his time there. And once a bunch of his teammates were at the pool and they see Brian walk by in a full polo outfit, like ready to go play polo. And just imagine this 6'10" guy in like a tight, like little polo outfit.
That's great. I love that.
Right? But during his 2 years playing basketball there, he attracted the attention of NBA scouts and general managers by earning all Pac-10 honors by averaging 14 points and 7.8 rebounds per game.
So now we're going to get a little bit into his pro career, which it's going to be a little bit. I promise you we won't bore you with every single detail. Yes. So Williams played 2 seasons at Arizona before he was drafted in the 1991 NBA draft by the Orlando Magic. He was the 10th pick in the first round of drafts.
Which this is like a pretty big deal to be picked in the first round.
Right, especially like straight out of that collegiate level. Mm-hmm. During his first 2 seasons here, he did see pretty limited action, like actually out on the court. But during his time with the Orlando Magic, he was also diagnosed with clinical depression. According to Sports Illustrated, he admitted to one suicide attempt by crashing his car into a pole, and his mother suggested that there may have been a second one by overdosing on his sleeping medication. And he was one of the first cases of mental health issues in an NBA player that has been publicized, which... people should talk about more, because just because you're a great player doesn't mean you're still happy.
Exactly.
The next season, the Orlando Magic had the first draft pick, and they chose center Shaquille O'Neal. Maybe that's what I read in the article and got confused. It's Maybe. Probably that one. They thought that having O'Neal as center and Williams as a power forward, that they would basically be an unstoppable team. But because of his depression, he only played 21 games out of the 82-game season. That's a lot of fucking games. I didn't realize how many games they played.
Yeah, just like hockey, like a hockey season, they play like 3 or 4 times a week.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He was then traded to the Denver Nuggets when the Magic decided that they did not have the means to properly help Bison. He also played 2 seasons with the Denver Nuggets. In the 1993 to 1994 season, he played a career high of 80 games and averaged 8 points per game. And originally I thought this sounded pretty good because I couldn't score any points, but apparently there are people who score like 40 points per game. So yeah, he still has a decent average.
And he gets better.
Yeah.
So Williams then played 1 year for the Los Angeles Clippers, where he began to play even more while he was here. He started averaging 15.8 points per game, which was his best single season numbers to date. Unfortunately, there was a contract dispute, and reports say that Williams was asking for too high of a price for his contract.
This happens a lot.
Mm-hmm. Due to this dispute, he could not find a team to sign him by the beginning of the 96-97 season, and he sat out for most of this season. He then signed a contract with the Chicago Bulls in April of 1997 as a free agent for 9 games before the end of the season when he was 28. He became an important backup player for this team during their run for their 5th championship, and he played alongside Michael Jordan, who was coming back after his brief retirement, and they won their championship that year, which was their 5th out of 7 years.
Which is really good.
Yeah. Some of his friends say that this was actually the happiest that they had ever seen him during his NBA career was when he won.
That's nice. So he eventually finished his career playing two seasons with the Detroit Pistons, where he set career highs of 16.2 points per game and 8.9 rebounds per game in the 1997-98 season. He signed a 7-year, $45 million contract with the Pistons as a free agent. In 1998, he changed his name to Bison Dele to honor his Native American and African ancestry, and the name Dele originated from a language in Nigeria, which I think it's like a pretty cool name. Like, Bison is just like a very strong name.
It is.
During his 1998-99 season, there was a player's strike that decreased the number of games from around 80 to 50. Some of his teammates say that this may have caused him to think about quitting basketball. Probably getting, like, that break, you know?
Yeah. Then, before the start of the 99-2000 season, at the age of 30, Dele suddenly retired from the NBA when he was still in the prime of his career with no mourning. He shocked everyone.
Yeah.
He was the Pistons' highest paid player, but he had a strained relationship with the organization and decided to walk away from the remaining 5 years and $36 million contract rather than be traded again.
Which is a lot of money to walk away from.
Exactly. He only played 49 games in his second season with the Pistons, and the management did ask Bison to reconsider his retirement, as he was one of their best players on an up-and-coming team.
Yeah.
But he declined, and his teammates noted that they were starting to see his behavior change. His mind was never fully in it. He would daydream a lot and not pay attention, which his teammates and his coaches tended to find annoying.
Yeah, they're trying to do their job, too, at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. And in one extreme instance, Bison had to be restrained by his other teammates when he tried opening the emergency exit door of the team's private jet during a flight.
Yeah. He was just, like, he had a really bad childhood, from what stories say. Mm-hmm. So he was just having a tough go of it.
It's been theorized that he wasn't really all that passionate about the sport to begin with and felt that he had earned enough money at this point so he could walk away.
Yeah. And he, at this point, had already earned $16 million, which was fucking crazy.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, that's a lot of money.
That can set anyone up, really, for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And this is just, like, a fun fact on his personal life. There are reports that Dele dated Madonna at one point in his career, which is very fun.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, or it's been said, that he found her self-absorbed and broke it off. Which, I mean, she's Madonna. Like,
exactly.
She's probably self-absorbed because she's Madonna. Outside of basketball, Dele also had other passions and hobbies, which these are, like, you're cultured as fuck.
Yes.
He played the saxophone, violin, and trumpet. He also enjoyed, like, adventure traveling and earned a pilot's license and even did, like, skydiving. And he also loved reading and would spend hours reading art and philosophy texts.
This is my favorite thing right here.
You want the aquarium thing?
Yeah.
You can read it.
So he also had an aquarium in his house with, like, a ton of tropical fish, but yeah. The aquarium was the size of his wall.
That's incredible.
And so when it would be winter in Detroit and it was gloomy and his depression was coming because he couldn't go outside,
right?
He would spend his time snorkeling in his aquarium, like, alongside all the tropical fish and coral reefs. And I was like, I want to do that.
That's how you spend your money. If you have $16 million, exactly. Do shit that's actually going to make you happy.
I want enough money for that.
Also, now that daylight savings has happened and it's not pitch black when we leave work, I'm like, I can already feel the tension lifting. Because, like, when I leave work and it's pitch black at 6 p.m., I'm like, there's nothing else I can do for the day. I have to go home.
That is very true. You know?
So I'm glad that daylight savings is done because it's a lot. But I say, basically, I get what he's saying. Like,
yeah.
When it's gloomy, you want to do something that makes you happy.
Yeah, and it's in Detroit, it's snowing, and you can't go outside and do things.
Yeah. And He was also a very generous person. He would give money to anyone who needed it because he had enough. Whenever his teams would make it to the playoffs, the players would get extra money, but he always asked that his playoff bonuses be split between him, the ball boys, janitors, and support staffs for the team. There was also one time when one of the secretaries for the Detroit Pistons retired, and all of the players were asked to give $100 to buy a gift for her. Instead, Bison invited her to his house, cooked her a gourmet dinner, and when she left, handed her an envelope containing $10,000. Can you imagine?
I would shake my pants.
It's just like, it's nice to see someone who has money and is giving it to people who need it because he doesn't care about it. It's because he didn't have any money growing up either.
Yeah, you know? Like he didn't care about the fancy material items.
Yeah. It's very cool to see. Usually people like this, it goes to their head and they're like an asshole. And he also bought his mother a house and paid for her to get a degree at UCLA and bought his dad a Harley Davidson, which UCLA is a very expensive school. Yeah. So that's pretty nice.
But a sad story that I didn't put in here.
Yeah.
I heard that like he wasn't as close with his dad in his adulthood because his dad still lived in Las Vegas.
Right.
His dad had a problem with coke. And so when he bought him like a $25,000 Harley. And when he brought him the motorcycle, his dad was like, next time, just bring me the cash.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fun.
Right?
Be grateful.
Right? Like, seriously, I'd be grateful for anything anyone gives me.
Yeah.
Ever.
Also, if you're that strapped for cash, fucking sell it when he leaves and don't be a dick about it.
You're not wrong. Like, after his retirement, he began to spend long periods of time traveling to Lebanon, the Mediterranean, New Zealand, the Philippines, and the Australian outback before learning to sail.
Yeah, he was a busy guy.
Mm-hmm. He settled down in Tahiti and purchased a catamaran to sail the seven seas in 2000. And this boat was called Hakuna Matata.
So happy.
Right? He also went backpacking around Europe and he ran with the bulls in Spain.
Which, like, honestly sounds like it's a fake thing, even though I know it's real.
Exactly. He also began dating a woman named Serena Midnight Carlin. And this was the first woman in his life who, like, really made an impact and stuck. They were in a serious relationship, and they began planning on getting married.
Eventually.
So, couple fun facts.
Yes.
First one, her middle name is Midnight, because when she was born, apparently, her head came out at 11:59 p.m. on April 4th, and her body came out at 12:01 a.m. on April 5th of 1972. So, like, that's a cute name.
It is a cute name. It's also, like, a very cool name, like, mysterious. Yes. Midnight.
And the second fun fact about Serena is that her father was a famous, like, religious and spiritual figure. And because of this, she got to, like, meet a bunch of famous people.
Yeah.
And she met and, like, became good friends with Prince.
Can you imagine again?
That is insane.
And another thing, like, about her father being a spiritual person and being a leader, he was kind of like a spiritualist to the stars.
Yeah.
And so Serena grew up knowing a lot of famous people and I, like, saw, or maybe I was listening to it on a podcast, but they were talking about how she basically, like, didn't really give famous people the time of day and treated them as her equals because at the end of the day, they are. And that made, like, all of the famous men want her more. So she was also mysterious Midnight. I'm sorry. I just think that's so fun that she was basically like, yeah. I literally don't care that you're famous right now, so...
Well, and I read that she, like, started working as a makeup artist on, like, movies and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
And then literally got bored of it.
Yeah.
And so she was like, well, I'll work a couple retail jobs. And then she, like, moved to New York to sell real estate.
Yeah.
And, like, she was just like, yeah, I don't care about this celebrity life.
Yeah.
Like, meeting celebrities all the time.
Didn't give a fuck about it.
Yeah. So she's a cool gal.
Yeah.
So, when Serena and Bison first met, they didn't immediately begin dating, but they developed a relationship over time.
Yeah.
They met while Bison was playing in the NBA, and they were introduced to each other because her roommate had actually dated Bison back in high school.
That's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm. And, like, they did date for a little bit, but they broke up because Bison had to constantly travel for the NBA. But after he retired, they rekindled their relationship. And at one point, Bison asked Serena to travel on his boat with him for a long time, like months at a time. And Serena was kind of like complaining about a debt that she had, and she couldn't just stop working late with him because of her bills and debt. So Bison sent her a $50,000 check in an envelope with a letter that literally just said, "This is what I think about your financial difficulties," and was basically saying, like, pay off your debt and come live your life with me.
Yeah.
And they did have a lot in common. They were both artistic and shy. And, yeah. Like, they were both into philosophy, and they were just good for each other.
Yeah, everything I saw was just, like, neither of them really succeeded in any type of relationship until they met each other type thing, too, because they were just so well-suited for each other.
Yeah.
Everything kind of changes on July 6, 2002, when Dele, his girlfriend Serena, his brother Miles DeBord, who had changed his name from Kevin, he also changed his name, and a captain named Bertrand Saldo, who was 32 years old, set sail from Tahiti. The trip was to go to an island called,
Raiatea?
Raiatea. And then to the shores of Hawaii, which was Bison's dream to sail there. That's a long fucking sailing trip.
Yeah. It was supposed to take months.
Yeah. And it turns out that Serena actually wasn't a fan of DeBord. And in emails to her parents and friends, she did not sound excited at all about his presence on the trip. And just to give you a little bit more information about Miles, because we haven't talked a lot about him. At this time, he was 6'8 and weighed about 280 pounds, so he was about the same size as Bison. Growing up, he was also very good at sports, but he had severe asthma that stopped him from playing. He also suffered from depression and felt as though he always lived in his brother's shoes. Apparently, Miles had unexpectedly shown up on the boat for this trip and basically invited himself on board, saying that he wanted to patch things up with Bison. The brothers were known to have a sibling rivalry and would often fight. One of their friends later stated that these two men were as different as two sides of a coin. And Captain Saldo had also told some friends that he was uneasy about the long journey ahead of them after Miles had come on board. But the $4,000 a month paycheck was too appealing to pass up over an unsure feeling.
I feel that.
Yeah, that's a pretty good paycheck. At Tahiti's Taina Marina, that's the only way I can imagine that's pronounced, but I'm sure it's wrong, a witness reported that he overheard a quarrel between the two brothers, which story checks out, they fought a lot. The same day, Saldo phoned a friend to say that they would be leaving Tahiti soon for the Marquesas Island. Carlin left a voicemail for her parents saying, "Everything is going super." And 2 days into the voyage, three satellite phone calls were made from the boat, and that was the last phone calls that would ever be made from that boat.
So 3 days after the voyage set sail, the boat was spotted by a hotel employee in the lagoon of a nearby island of Moorea?
Sure.
Okay. Of Moorea, with one person aboard. This person was Miles DeBord, and he would spend a week in the island of Moorea with his girlfriend, Erica Weiss. During this week, Miles told his girlfriend that Bison and Serena were on another island and that the captain was also in Moorea with some friends. Miles' girlfriend told the LA Times, quote, "I didn't have a desire to meet Bison. From Miles' point of view, it sounded like Bison was treating Miles poorly. Miles even said to me once, 'If I ever keep going on and on and on to make a point, please stop me. That's what Bison does.'" And then Erica left Moorea on July 15th. On July 16th, witnesses reported seeing a man that fit Miles' description guiding a 55-foot catamaran into Phaeton Bay Marina in
Taravo,
Taravo, along Tahiti's southeastern shore. The boat had been renamed and re-registered as the Arabella. The letters spelling out Hakuna Matata had been removed, but you could still see the outline of the original letters.
Yeah, sun right? is a thing.
On July 20th, Debord brought the boat into Tahiti, and he was the only person still on the vessel. No one on board was ever seen from again. When the boat was docked, Debord caught a ride to the airport and got on a plane and vanished. This was obviously very suspicious, but there wasn't really a lot police could do.
And almost 7 weeks passed before the family was able to get authorities involved. For the most part, everyone just thought that Bison was being his eccentric old self, traveling the world, and would turn up soon. But when he didn't, the police actually got involved. On September 5th, 2002, police used a sting operation organized by DeLay's family and friends to detain Debord in Phoenix, Arizona. Turns out, Debord had forged his brother's signature in order to buy $152,000 worth of gold under his brother's name, which had actually been negotiated down from $500,000. At the time of his disappearance, Bison had a net worth of $20 million. He had used DeLay's passport and credit card as identification. After the bank saw that something was off with the check, they contacted DeLay's financial advisor, Kevin Porter, who saw that the address and phone number on the check had been changed, and the address was now to a P.O. box in Miami. Porter called the new number on the check and listened to the voicemail. The voice identified itself as B, but Porter knew that this was not Bison's voice. The person claiming to be Bison would actually have to be back at the coin shop on the 5th to finish the transaction, and the person who showed up on that day was Miles Debord, and the Phoenix police were waiting there to detain him. But the police had to release him after Debord claimed that Bison had made the actual deal to buy the coins and had sent him to just pick them up, and they had no way of confirming or denying this. 2 days before this operation, the Hakuna Matata was found off of the coast of Tahiti with its nameplate removed and changed, and what appeared to be bullet holes in the boat just patched up. Around the same time, Debord called his mother, telling her he would never hurt his brother and could not survive in prison.
The FBI and French authorities then became involved in the investigation, and they concluded that DeLay, Carlin, and Saldo were most likely murdered and then thrown overboard or forced to walk off the boat into the ocean. They also said that the bodies were likely dumped in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, which would make it highly unlikely that their bodies would ever be found. Back in the U.S., Miles met up with his girlfriend and, like, confessed to her and gave her an account of the events that happened on the boat that day.
Right.
But, again, we don't know or will ever know if this is what actually happened.
Yeah.
He said that he and his brother got into a fight on the boat, where Carlin had accidentally gotten hit during the fight and died when her head struck part of the boat.
Which is very possible.
Mm-hmm. And it said that then Saldo, who was the captain, said that they had to return to the shore to report her death. And DeLay, who was panicked, killed him by beating him to death with a wrench.
Sounds less accurate.
Even though he had a gun, because the next account
yeah.
was that Debord took his brother's gun and shot him in self-defense, saying that if he didn't do this, he would have been strangled.
Right.
But again, he had a gun.
Yeah.
Debord then panicked and tied some bodybuilder weights to the bodies and then tossed all three bodies overboard into the shark-infested waters and brought the boat back into the port of Morea. After his death, Debord's lifelong best friend and lawyer, Paul White, was questioned regarding his client but never gave over any information.
Yeah.
Miles's girlfriend, Erica, said that she didn't believe the story and thought that while the brothers were fighting, Miles killed Bison and then realized that there were now witnesses that he had to take care of.
Sounds more likely.
And so after confessing to his girlfriend, Miles fled to Mexico, and Erica did the great thing and took the story straight to the police.
Which you don't often see in cases like this. The girlfriend tries to protect them, and I'm glad that she did do that.
Yes.
Andrew Black, a spokesperson for the San Francisco FBI, made a statement saying, "We're anxious to find him. We believe he has information that's going to shed light on the circumstances surrounding the disappearance of these three individuals." Miles called his mother again from Mexico in tears, saying, "I found something and I tried to cover it up, but I didn't do what they're saying. No one will believe me." And then he threatened to kill himself. On the morning of September 15th, 2002, DeBord was found unconscious, lying on a beach in Tijuana, just south of the U.S.-Mexico border. He had overdosed on insulin and was not taking his asthma medication. He was then transported back to the U.S. to a hospital in San Diego, where he remained in a coma for 2 weeks before being taken off of life support on September 28th, and the truth died with him, with no justice for anyone. Their mother, Patricia Williams, made a statement saying, "My boys are gone, and neither of them can tell me what happened. And even if someone pieces together the story or tells me what Miles told them, that's just for the law, the press, and the public. It still doesn't explain what happened inside of the boys. That's all I want to know." Can you imagine, like, losing both of your children
within 2 weeks?
Yeah, like, that's horrible.
Yeah.
The Tahitian police searched the boat, which revealed patched up holes and traces of blood. They did not believe Miles' story of self-defense and concluded that the murders did in fact take place on the boat. The boat also had an emergency distress beacon on it, but was not detected as it was never activated. Michael Marate, the chief prosecutor in Tahiti, said, "All of the elements put together end to end lead us to consider that they have apparently been killed. There is also every reason to believe that they were murdered and that a handgun was used."
But there was also another FBI theory that not a single shot was fired, as they weren't really able to prove that the holes in the boat were actually bullet holes since they were closed up.
Right.
And or if they were, that they resulted from this exact incident. And so the second theory is that Miles used the gun to force all three of them off the boat into the shark-infested waters and just sailed away. Which I feel like would have been worse.
That is worse, I think.
When trying to find a motive about why Miles would kill his brother and then turn around and assume his identity to buy gold coins,
yeah,
they discovered that Miles was always money hungry.
Oh.
Miles was always trying these get-rich-quick schemes, and when those failed, he would turn to Bison, who frequently saved him financially. On two separate occasions, Bison had given Miles $50,000 in cash to help him out, and he would also pay for all of his doctor bills.
That's so much money. Like, how are you going through that so quickly?
I know. And Bison's agent, Kevin Porter, said that he believed that Miles was tired of always failing, especially compared to his brother, and that the sibling rivalry led to murder. Their mother made another statement to the press saying, "I can't believe this is a Cain and Abel story like everyone is saying. This is too multi-layered and complex for anyone to make that jump. I'm sure of it." A memorial service was held for the two boys together at the Trinity Baptist Church in Los Angeles on October 12, 2002. And when they died, Bison was 33 and Miles was 35.
It's a really sad story.
It is.
Because either way, like, he killed his brother.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like that had to have been what happened.
Like, whether it was in self-defense or not.
Yeah. You're still, something happened out there.
Exactly.
And we'll never know.
Yeah, I hate these stories where you never find out a definitive answer.
Yeah, because we may think we know the answer, but, like, that died with Miles.
Exactly.
And everybody else who was on that boat.
Or maybe, I don't know, I'm just thinking of random things in my head. Yeah. I'm like, maybe he was having an affair with Serena and then Bison found it. Or, like, you know, crazy shit.
I just feel like Serena and Bison were, like, too good to, like, do that.
Very true. I get
that. But We also literally do not know anything about them personally, and that's just me projecting my opinion.
Yes, I wanted them to be perfect.
Yes. Everyone else said they were perfect, okay?
You're not wrong.
All
do
right.
you have a Florida man to cheer us up after this unsolved case?
I do. It's very dumb.
Yes.
It's Love very it. Short.
It's very Florida then.
It is. And apparently it was what appears to be the very first Florida man of the year 2020.
Yes.
So this happened January 2nd. A Panama City man is behind bars after he crashed his vehicle into a bar just so he could steal a Dr. Pepper. When 28-year-old Gavin Lee saw that the bar was closed, he drove his pickup truck through the front window. Once inside, he grabbed a Dr. Pepper out of the cooler, sat down at a table, and drank it. Police say Lee had a handgun in his pocket at the time and is facing charges of armed burglary. Even though no one was there.
Like, the thing is I've been pretty fucking drunk.
Yeah.
Ain't never been that drunk.
Never. Well, yeah, you shouldn't be driving your vehicle if you're that drunk.
Well, I mean, like, even just like to even when I'm blackout drunk.
Yeah.
I.e. this past weekend. Like, I still had the right sense to not drive my car home to.
Yeah.
Not drive it into a bar.
Also, we don't know if this man was drunk. He could have been completely sober.
You're
he
right.
just really just fucking be- wanted a Dr. Pepper. Like,
you're not wrong. I just immediately go to him being drunk.
Yeah. That, I mean,
or on drugs or whatever.
It's probably under the influence of something.
Yeah.
But I like to think that he just really needed a Dr. Pepper and was sober and was like, this will do.
That's how I felt. I woke up this morning and my boyfriend had left for work right before me. And I open up the fridge to, like, get my lunch stuff. And I had put, he drinks Bang. So I put a Bang and a Gatorade and a Sprite all right next to each other so he could just put it in his lunchbox really quickly.
Right.
And I put a Dr. Pepper on the top shelf away from all the other things for me. And I open up the door and the Dr. Pepper was gone.
Damn.
And I immediately texted him and I was like, bitch, what the fuck?
That was my Dr. Pepper.
And he was like, I'm sorry. And I was like, no, you're not forgiven.
That's fair. Don't steal a woman's Dr. Pepper.
Like, I didn't tell him it was my Dr. Pepper, but he should know.
He should know.
It's my favorite soda. He should know.
He should know what is going on inside of your mind, Sarah. Well, we hope that you guys liked this week. It's a bit of a shorter week, but that's fine.
That
You'll
happens.
Have to deal with it.
Yep.
And if you liked this episode, make sure you go on Apple Podcast, leave us a 5-star review, and Mom, if you're listening, hi, I love you.
I hope your mom is listening.
My mom, I told her that we started this podcast almost a year ago when we started this podcast, and I was talking to her like a couple days ago, and I was like, hey, I gotta go, I have to finish editing the podcast. She was like, what podcast? I was like, Mom, I have a podcast. And she was like, what? What's it about?
Your mom is my favorite.
I was like, it's about murder. And she was like, I raised you right.
See, where like my mom, I talk to her about the podcast all the time.
Yeah.
She could not give two fucking fucks. Like, she's just like, okay. I was like, Mom, we just hit 20,000 listens. Thanks, by the way.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay. And I was like, that's a big deal.
That's a lot of
a
people.
Lot. Yeah.
No, my mom was super excited. She said that she was going to listen, and I don't know if she'll actually do it. But if you're listening to this, Mom, I love you.
I also love you.
Yes. Everyone loves Jackie.
That is true.
But also reach out to us on the social media aspects of life.
Yep. On the Instagrams, the Facebooks, the Twitters. The Gmails.
It's Crime Binge or Crime Binge Podcast. It's linked in the show notes every week if you need it.
Yeah. You can figure it out.
You got it.
It's
You're
a blue
smart.
Icon.
You guys know how to reopen a closed tab, unlike us.
They do now.
It's true. If you didn't know, now you know. All right, guys. We'll see you next week. And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.